I'm very concerned if we don't pass this bill today, that this will be an initiative.
If they don't listen to the will of the people will speak.
We can be reasonable, we can communicate, we can be respectful, we can be civil, we can find common ground.
And if our partners buckle under this political pressure, if the hard choices just become too hard, then we'll just keep moving forward.
Mr. Speaker, in conclusion, the $10 founding father without a father who got a lot farther by working a lot harder, by being a lot smarter, by being a self-starter, by 14, they place him in charge of a trading charter.
Welcome to 45 Days, a KUER news podcast where we break down week by week the bills, lawmakers, and events of the 2017 Utah legislative session. I'm Terry Gilday, KUER's news director, and I'm in studio with reporters Whitney Evans, Lee Hale, and Nicole Nixon. Hi.
Hi. Hey.
So last week was our guns and booze episode. No booze this week, but more guns. Lots of guns. In fact, the resurgence of a bill that was stalled last week in committee, but this week it found its way through. This is HB 237. This is the Firearms and Domestic Violence Amendments bill that Representative Lee Perry put before a House committee last week. It stalled last week in a 5-5 tie. Two representatives were absent, a Republican and a Democrat. Republican Eric Hutchings and Democrat Angela Romero were both absent. But this week it came back up in committee and it passed. And Nicole, you were there. What happened?
Yeah, again, so this is the bill that would end the broad requirement for a concealed carry permit. There are a few exceptions. So if you want to carry a concealed weapon that's loaded, you still need a permit. If you want to take a concealed weapon near a school or a gun-free zone, you still need a permit for that under this bill. So that's the first part. The sponsor is Representative Lee Perry. He's a Republican. He says it would just make it legal to have an unloaded weapon in your purse or under your shirt or under your coat without that permit. So this bill also includes some provisions that are supposed to make it harder for people who've been convicted of domestic violence crimes to have and purchase guns. It would require anyone convicted of domestic violence or somebody that's on probation for domestic violence to surrender their guns and ammo. Also, right now, licensed firearms sellers are supposed to run a background check on anybody who's trying to purchase a weapon. And it would require a seller, if they run a background check on you and they see that you have a history of domestic violence or a criminal history that prohibits you from owning a gun, they would be required to let local law enforcement know so that they come and, I think, can arrest you for trying to purchase a gun when you're not supposed to be. So this was heard last week. It stalled with a tie vote. It came back this week. There were a lot of the same concerns that were voiced as last time. One of those is that the class and the training that are currently required to get that concealed carry permit are beneficial. Some Republicans were worried about making those optional instead of mandatory, the class and the training. Also, that these two issues don't belong in the same bill together. And this was a concern that a lot of people had. Here's Democratic Representative Angela Romero. She was absent, like we said, from the first vote, but came back to oppose this bill.
The connection to sexual assault and this connection to domestic violence, I just don't see the relevance, and I just can't support legislation where I'm connecting violence with concealed carry.
So we mentioned that two people were absent from the first vote. They both came back for a second vote, and one voted for the bill and another voted against the bill. So the reason it passed this time was because Republican Representative Becky Edwards switched her vote from a no last time to a yes vote this time. She later said that she still has concerns about the bill. She sits on a board of a domestic violence shelter for women in Davis County. She said that she likes the domestic violence provisions in the bill. But like a lot of people, she said that she doesn't love that these two issues were combined into one bill. So here she is talking about that.
The domestic violence advocates are concerned, and the Second Amendment folks are concerned. Neither of these partners is happy sort of being paired together in this piece of legislation. And I think in some ways it's a bitter pill for everyone, and maybe it's the only way to address this issue is to kind of marry them together.
So Becky Edwards voted against this the first time around. Then everyone comes back together with the full roster of the committee, votes again. Becky Edwards switches her vote. The bill moves forward. But from what we're hearing, Nicole, she's not that excited about it. Angela Romero's not that excited about it. In fact, the NRA opposes it because they don't want any restrictions on this domestic violence stuff. And gun control advocates oppose it because it does away with concealed carry permits. So why do we keep moving forward with this?
I think I talked to her and she said that Representative Becky Edwards, she said that she wanted to keep talking about it. She wanted it to go to the House floor for debate. She wanted to, if it passes, see what happens in the Senate. And maybe Governor Herbert, he vetoed a bill similar to this without getting rid of the concealed carry permit a few years ago. He might do it again. Who knows?
So I think Republicans who want to do away with concealed carry permits are looking for some kind of palatable way for Governor Gary Herbert to sign legislation. And so they're trying to marry issues together.
Yeah, I think the sponsor, Representative Lee Perry, maybe he sees this as a sort of compromise where in some ways both sides get what they want, but they also get something that they're not really sure about. They don't really want.
Well, HB 237 is now headed to the House floor in the final weeks of the session. We'll keep an eye on it. Let's talk about some more gun stuff. Nicole, again, another bill that you covered this week, HB 198. This is simply titled Conceal Carry Amendments. This is Representative Carrie Ann Lisenby, and the Senate sponsor is Senator Todd Weiler of Davis County. This would create a provincial concealed carry permit for 18 to 20-year-olds, which is an age group now that doesn't get access to a concealed carry permit. Why do we need this bill?
So Representative Carrie Ann Lisenby, she's a brand new representative from Clearfield. She was just elected. She says that the idea for this bill came from a group of young women who brought the idea to her. They say that they want to protect themselves on campus from being raped. If they're between the ages of 18 and 20, they can't have a concealed handgun. A lot of college campuses don't permit open carry, so their only option, I guess, would be through this bill if it passes to get that provisional special permit. A few people spoke out against this bill. They were all Democrats. They voiced concerns that even though they are legal adults, people between the ages of 18 and 20 are still developing mentally. Someone pointed to research that shows when legislation like this that allows more firearms on college campuses is enacted, it's often followed by an increase in crime and violence on campus. So Democrats said this bill goes too far. But then another Republican woman, Representative Kim Coleman, got up to support the bill. She gave this very passionate speech, and she made everybody on the House floor go silent. So let's listen to what she had to say.
The step too far is a completed rape. The step too far is the violation of a woman or a man. That is the step too far.
Coleman says she has a 19-year-old daughter. She hesitated, and then she said that that's how old she was when she was a statistic. She later said that that meant she was attacked and somebody tried to rape her when she was 19. She cited a study from the Journal of Quantitative Criminology that found that when someone is attacked, male or female, the best way to get away is to resist the attacker with a weapon.
Why would we ever deny someone the right to avail themselves of the single most effective way of completing a rape? My 19-year-old daughter looks at her five roommates and wonder statistically which one of them it's going to be.
In the end, every House Democrat still voted against this bill and every Republican voted for it, and it passed the full House.
And so now it heads to the Senate. We'll keep our eye on that one. That's HB 198. Let's move on to another topic here. I want to have a broader discussion this week on the podcast about what the legislature is doing or not doing to help teachers. We talk a lot about education spending. We talk a lot about this this acronym, the WPU, the Weighted Pupil Unit, how much the state is spending on individual students in the state. But we're facing a crisis with teacher shortages. We're not being able to retain teachers. We have some of the lowest teacher salaries in the nation when it comes to how much we pay our public school teachers in Utah. And it comes up every session, but not a whole lot happens every session. And Lee, I want to pull you into the discussion because before you were a public media reporter, you were a teacher here in Utah.
Right, in Jordan District out near the western side of part of the Salt Lake Valley. And I did not make very much money.
So you made the jump from public school teacher to the very lucrative profession of public media reporter.
Right, and I should say, like all good teachers or semi-decent teachers say, you know, you don't do it for the money, which I could say about my job currently right now, but the money helps you do your job and it helps you not worry and helps you be effective. And you know, I chose another career with the word public in it, so not very lucrative. But I'm making substantially more as a reporter than I was as a teacher. It's not hard to beat a teacher salary in Utah. But I can just tell you from my experience, I taught special ed resource classes to ninth graders. Putting in long days, coming home, seeing your paycheck, and it doesn't add up in your mind. The exhaustion does not equal the compensation. And I thought it would affect me less than it did, but it really has. It really plays a part.
And we're seeing lots of teachers around Utah taking second jobs, working at Costco on the weekends, working at a restaurant, doing some other kind of retail work just to make ends meet. We're not talking about extra money. We're talking about money just to pay their bills.
Right. And you also hear about a lot of teachers who move into Utah who take significant pay cuts from the state that they left to teach here, whether it's because they're coming for a spouse or another reason. So it's just not an attractive place to be a teacher for that reason alone.
So lawmakers appear to understand that this is a problem, that they acknowledge it, but there's not a whole lot being done. I just want to talk about a couple of bills and hand it back to you, Lee, because you covered one of these this week. One is a joint resolution. This is House Joint Resolution 8, which is, again, resolutions are non-binding legislation. They're essentially political statements. This is called the Joint Resolution for Supporting the Retention of Public Educators. Again, we've got Davis County Republican Becky Edwards in the conversation here. Let me just read you a little bit of the language from this resolution. This resolution recognizes the shortage of credentialed public educators in the state of Utah. It acknowledges that public education is a critical component of Utah's prosperity. It wants to direct revenue from the management of public lands and increase teacher salaries. And this is an interesting political stimmick, so because it's marrying, again, we've got issues that don't really work together that are being married by lawmakers. It uses the argument and the call to manage public lands and the resources of public lands as a means of increasing teacher salaries. Again, political statement, not a whole lot of teeth here.
And it seems like what we were talking about earlier was kind of fancy footwork where, you know, I mean, the reality is to really raise salaries, you have to increase some tax somewhere. You have to find money. And oftentimes with Utah legislatures, it seems like they're going to find any way to talk about increasing that salary in as creative a way as they can that doesn't, you know, raise taxes in any way.
And one bill that you covered this week, Lee, HB 108, this is a Representative Kay Christofferson. This is a bill that would increase salaries for some teachers. Which teachers and why?
Math and science. A lot more math than science, because these are the teachers that districts have a hard time hanging on to, mainly because, especially if you're a math teacher, I mean, the skill level you have to be a qualified, for instance, competent high school math teacher, those skills are very marketable. And so somebody might teach for 2 years and think, I'd rather just work for a startup and make twice as much money with the exact same skill set. So districts are having a hard time filling those positions. So this bill gives those teachers that qualify $5,000 extra dollars every year, which is a pretty significant bonus compared to what they're making, basically as a way just to keep them around. And this has been around for a while, for a couple of years, by the Utah State Board of Education. Currently, there's 1,200 teachers who qualify, and this adds 400 more. So, you know, it's kind of a drop in the bucket when you think about the state as a whole. This bill just brings in 400 more teachers who are going to get $5,000 more every year in hopes that they don't leave early.
Can I ask, is this in response to math and science teachers leaving and having trouble finding new ones, or is this more of a preemptive solution?
Oh, it's in response to a problem, for sure. You hear a lot of numbers thrown around, which is why I hesitate to share any statistics about teacher shortages in Utah, because I don't know what to trust, and I need to do some more digging about that. But just the reality is that districts are calling up until the first day of school trying to get some of these positions filled. And if you are a math or science teacher, you get snatched up quickly. So this is hopefully, you know, if you have someone in the classroom already, the goal is that they won't leave. But there was a teacher in the during the Senate committee meeting I was at this week, who was a biology teacher, and they're actually not qualified because biology isn't seen as dire need as the others. So it's kind of this decision that was made. Initially,
considered
they were
a soft science or something.
Initially, they were included actually when this went to the House.
Okay.
But then the fiscal note was too big, and they thought, well, this is the least of the. It seems a little funny saying it, but yeah, that biology teachers seem to be a little bit less in demand. And he was pretty upset by that. You know, he says it's not easy to fill science teachers' positions at his school or his district. His name's Bruce Daly, and he kind of had this as kind of a final thought, basically the kind of the bigger problem.
As far as superintendents and school districts coming up with that money, I believe they believe in equality across the board, because all of our teachers work very, very hard, and I don't care what field they're in, what level, from kindergarten to the AP that I teach, they all deserve it. And it's a shame that we're treated the way we are.
He was speaking in response to, sometimes this argument comes up, people say, why don't the districts just pay those teachers more? Districts aren't going to do that. Districts have this pay scale. They're going to pay every teacher the same. And he says that's not a bad thing. He just said every teacher should get this bonus. This should be a discussion for every teacher. And I think that a lot of teachers kind of find that feeling, I mean, have that same similar feeling where it's, when you start picking and choosing subjects, then it gets a little strange. What about special ed teachers? What about, it could be a number of things. Really educated English teacher who teaches AP classes. Those are some really marketable skills, but they're choosing to stay at a school. So that was kind of the feeling, kind of the vibe, I think, as I've been talking to teachers about these bills, this one in particular. So last week I went to a press conference held by the House Democratic Caucus, and they were talking about some bills that they have coming up that could potentially improve teacher salary, or at least just teacher welfare in the state. And it was one of the saddest press conferences I've been to. Very few people showed up. There's some teachers spoke, but they weren't really speaking to many people in the room. The feeling from the Democrats is that, this is not happening fast enough. This bill that we talked about might be the only sign of life as far as actually increasing pay, and there doesn't seem to be much coming down the barrel.
So Democratic lawmakers held a press conference. They have some legislation they think could help raise teacher salaries faster than any of this other stuff is moving, or introduce stuff that could actually raise teacher salaries across the board. But again, because they're a super minority in the House and the Senate, we're not even sure if any of those bills will even be heard in committee, correct?
Yeah, and these bills are pretty creative, actually. There aren't so many that say we need to raise salary. One, for instance, helps teachers, this is by Representative Lynn Hemingway, helps teachers make a down payment on a home, gives them a little cut, $15,000 to make a down payment, and basically they can receive that money later as long as they stay in the state for a couple years. But people, they're trying to get really creative to get some kind of money into the hands of teachers, because right now it just seems like it's not budging.
We'll keep our eyes on it, and again, I think this is one of those issues that comes up in every legislative session, isn't going away, but educators in our state certainly are suffering. Thanks, Lee, for your coverage of that. I want to move on to Senate Bill 196. This is simply entitled Health Education Amendments. This is Senator Stuart Adams, Republican, and this gets away from language that sort of health educators can use when talking about homosexuality in the classroom. It does away essentially with a law that's nicknamed the No Promo Homo Law. And Whitney, you've covered this in the past. Give us some background on this and what Adams' bill would do if passed.
Well, right now with current law, the argument is it's okay to say negative things about homosexuality in the classroom setting, but you can't say anything affirmative or positive because current law prohibits the advocacy of homosexuality in the classroom. So this has caused situations where teachers and administrators have said they can't do things like protect kids who are gay from bullying because they're not allowed to tell other students that that student is okay. Recently at Harriman High School, teachers were told to take down posters that said basically that the school is a safe place for LGBT students because of this law. And Republican Senator Stuart Adams' bill would remove the word homosexuality from the law and put in its place premarital or extramarital sexual activity. So instead of basically prohibiting the advocacy of homosexuality, it's prohibiting premarital or extramarital sexual activity. The bill doesn't change anything about instruction in the state of Utah. It just reiterates Utah's abstinence-only based education.
Can I say, it's interesting looking at these health education bills, because I covered a similar one about sex ed. And I think it's interesting because people's perception of what happens in schools, I think, is a little different than schools actually. What is happening in schools? For instance, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find teachers who are really worried so much about this law when, a student is actually confiding in them or this comes up in their classroom. They're probably trying to be sensitive and kind and thoughtful. I think that a lot of these bills, the intention is you don't want a teacher who is thoughtful and considerate to then be in trouble with the law, right? The idea is that teachers are probably trying to do the best job that they are currently, and some of them run into issues when they, I guess, kind of go out on a limb and try to help students probably more than the law allows.
And I'm sure the vast majority of teachers, are sensitive to the issue and are trying the best to do right for their kids, especially those kids who are sensitive to bullying. But these situations have occurred. There have been schools and teachers who have been confused about what to do in these specific situations. And that's where Senator Stuart Adams' bill comes in. And Senator Stevenson, Senator Howard Stephen, he's a Republican, commended Senator Adams for sponsoring the bill in committee.
I think you're a genius, because this could have been a very divisive bill with a lot, with hours and hours of debate. But what you've done here is create win-win. And most of all, our children will be the winners from this bill, because not only will they feel safer in our schools, and that teachers and faculty will have the capacity to make all children feel safe, they will also feel safer in our communities.
You know, for me, it's hard not to see this as the acceleration of sort of a larger evolution about LGBT rights and LGBT acceptance in this state. I've been in Utah for 6 years, and in that time, I have seen Utah's ban on same-sex marriage overturned in a federal court and a federal circuit court in the 10th. That particular case wasn't heard in the Supreme Court, but we saw marriage equality become a reality in the state of Utah. And on the legislative side, we saw an anti-discrimination bill that was passed. Then Senator Steve Urquhart and Jim DeBacchus sat down with members of the LDS Church, and they crafted this bill that was really rooted in compassion. And I think that this is a part of that evolution. I mean, I can't see how it's not.
You know? It's definitely indicative of some sort of evolution in the way state lawmakers and Utahns in general are thinking about issues that affect LGBT people in the state. So this change, if this passes, it would change our law so that we're not singling out a particular identifiable group, which could potentially open the state to a lawsuit. The Supreme Court has ruled that you can't single out a group. If you do, you're discriminating under the Equal Protection Clause. And I think Stuart Adams made it very clear that this is about treating all kids equally. And speaking of going back to the evolution of this discussion, you know, it's kind of amazing that we have people like Gail Ruzicka, who's head of the ultra-conservative Eagle Forum, speaking in favor of this bill. The Sutherland Institute spoke in favor of this bill. And the reason why is because in committee they appreciated that this bill still reiterates the state's dedication, I suppose, to teaching that premarital or extramarital sexual activity should not be taught in schools.
As long as it's abstinence-friendly, people can get on board in Utah.
As long as it's abstinence-friendly, people can get on board. And I think that was seen in this committee when this bill was discussed. And going back to the possibility of a lawsuit, Equality Utah announced back in October that it was filing a federal lawsuit against the state over this law named No Promo Homo, which literally means no promoting homosexuality. So they announced that they were planning to sue the state over this law because they said it violates First Amendment rights to free speech and 14th Amendment rights to equal protection under the law. And since this bill was introduced, Equality Utah has asked the judge in the case to stay that lawsuit as the bill moves through the legislature. And right now it's waiting to be heard on the Senate floor.
Whitney, let's wrap up with another bill that you covered this past week. This is HB 200. It's sexual assault processing amendments. There's an interesting sort of bipartisan partnership on this bill. Angela Romero from the House, who's a Democrat, is the House sponsor, and then Republican Senator Todd Weiler is the floor sponsor in the Senate. This bill would require that all rape kits be tested by law enforcement, which is not in current statute. Tell us a little bit more about this bill.
Well, it's another bill like SB 196 that sort of sailed through hearings with bipartisan support, and it could have gotten a little sticky, but it didn't. Like you said, it's Democratic Representative Angela Romero who sponsored it, and it requires all sexual assault kits that nurses collect from victims after a sexual assault or a rape has occurred. It requires all of those sexual assault kits to be sent to the state crime lab. And right now, there's a huge backlog. There's about 2,700 kits waiting to be tested. They're sitting on the shelves collecting dust, and it costs between $1,000 and $1,500 to test each one of these kits. So this bill would provide an additional $2.4 million to test some of those kits that are sitting on the shelves right now. Utah already got some federal funding to address that backlog. Romero's bill would simply provide additional one-time money to address the rest.
Any opposition from this at all in any way, shape, or form? This used to be an issue on the Salt Lake City level. We had a debate several years ago between then Police Chief Chris Burbank and city officials or city council members about having the resources and the money to test all rape kits in custody, correct?
Yeah, the argument is that DNA testing of all kits leads to more arrests and justice for victims, frankly, and it also has the capability of clearing innocent people accused of rape. But arguments were made early on in this process. This has been, you know, this discussion's been going on for several years now. Early on in the process, we heard arguments that when there's DNA evidence relating to other crimes waiting to be tested, why should sexual assault take precedence? Why should that evidence take precedence over other crimes? That discussion's really not being had anymore. I think people are seeing how effective testing all sexual assault kits is at leading to more arrests and finding justice for victims. That sort of argument has sort of gone away. So it got bipartisan support. It got unanimous support. And now it's just waiting to be heard in the Senate Judiciary, Law Enforcement, and Criminal Justice Committee. We'll see if it continues to have that bipartisan support in the Senate.
And we'll stop there for this week. In studio with me, Lee Hale, Whitney Evans, and Nicole Nixon. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
45 Days is a production of KUER News. JT Nebaker composed our music. Tim Slover and I produced this episode. I'm Terry Gilday.